Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, what's going on, guys? Sportsaholics 24/7 is back with a brand new live episode today. Not the start of season three just yet. Brandon wanted me to make that clear that season three has not started quite yet. That will be up and running soon enough. But today, some are calling it the biggest day in all of sports. So we have a lot to talk about. I'm your host, John, joined by Jordan. What's going on?
What's up, John? It's a great day to be a sports fan, to say the least.
Yep. So we're going to be breaking down the NFL draft, which is coming to a conclusion now. Also, the NBA playoffs. Obviously, the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight tonight, the fight of the century. And if we have time, we'll give some predictions for tonight's Kentucky Derby as well. But let's jump right into it with the NFL draft. Round seven coming to a conclusion right now. And, you know, there were some surprises. I think the first two picks in the draft weren't that big of a surprise. Obviously, Jameis Winston out of Florida State going to the Buccaneers, and Marcus Mariota, the quarterback out of Oregon, going to the Titans. So, Jordan, we'll start off with you. Which team had the best draft?
Well, it's obviously extremely tough to say. I mean, the draft is still going on. It's the third day. We probably won't know the answer to that until a few years down the road once all these players are evaluated at the next level. But the team that I like right from the start that I think did an excellent job at least through the first three rounds is the Oakland Raiders. Sitting at that number four spot in round one, they took, in my opinion, the best available player and their biggest necessity on the team, which was a wide receiver. They land Alabama receiver Amari Cooper, who I was hoping fell to the sixth to the Jets, but didn't happen. This guy is an NFL-ready receiver out of Alabama. He caught a ridiculous amount of passes. I think it was 120-something last year. He's a red zone threat. He can blow by guys. He's not the tallest. He's not the most athletic guy in the world, but with his catching skills, I think he's the complete package. And he's a guy who's going to be able to partner up with Derek Carr and step in at the next level and make an impact right away. And I think he's a future Pro Bowler. And in round two, they address another need. They grab Florida State defensive tackle Mario Edwards Jr. I think that was an excellent pick in many mock drafts. People were predicting him to go as high as mid-first round. I thought taking him in the second round was a great pick there. Their defense has been pretty bad the past few years. They grab him. And in the third round, they take Clive Walford out of University of Miami. He's a very interesting prospect at tight end, and they add another weapon for Derek Carr, and suddenly this Raiders offense is starting to look like something. So right off the bat, I would say Oakland, in my opinion, had the best draft.
Yeah, I think Oakland definitely did well. They addressed some of their big-time needs. Another team I think that did well was the Jacksonville Jaguars. I really liked the pickup of Dante Fowler, early on in the draft. This was a team that offensively they have some young receivers, they have some decent weapons, but I think defense is, they were actually solid on defense last season. But if they can get a better defense, that'll help out the offense greatly. And I think Dante Fowler's a guy that can definitely do that to help out the offensive side of things. They drafted T.J. Yeldon, the star running back out of Alabama, and I really like that pick. Then in the third round, they picked up A.J. Cann, an offensive lineman, just to boost that offensive line a little bit more. So I think, like you said, the Raiders had a great draft. I also like what Jacksonville did.
And, John, if I can just interrupt you for a second. If I was thinking, I see your points there. However, in my opinion, I think Jacksonville actually had one of the worst drafts. I mean, obviously they're adding three, possibly four very talented players onto that team. But if you look at other players who were available at that time and who they passed up on and where they're located in the drafts, I think some of those moves are actually quite questionable. They take Dante Fowler at number three after Jameis Winston and Marcus Mariota go off 1-2. And don't get me wrong, I think Dante Fowler will have a very good career in the NFL as a pass rusher. But I think it's a questionable pick because if you compare what he did in college to other players, he really came onto the scene this past senior year. I know he was a monster for Florida, and he's a sack machine. But if you look at who they passed up on, such as Leonard Williams, who drops, he could have stepped in on that defensive line in Jacksonville, and people are saying this guy is a perennial Pro Bowler and at the next level already. At a USC, he would have been a great pickup for Jacksonville at that number three spot. I think arguably most people were saying that he was the greatest defensive player in the draft. And while Dante Fowler could have a nice NFL career, I don't think it was a good decision to pass up on the best defensive player in the draft, which the consensus pick was Leonard Williams. And then in round two, they go T.J. Yeldon, who I think it's a good pick, but it's a reach at the 36th overall pick in the draft for a guy who never really lived up to his potential at Alabama. People could say he was a product of the system at Alabama, or his greatest, most successful years weren't as successful as other running backs in the draft this year. We obviously saw Todd Gurley and Melvin Gordon go in round one. But I think that's a little reach early in round two. I still don't believe that the running back position is as important as, per se, drafting a quality offensive lineman in rounds one and two, because I think a running back can only go really as far as the offensive line takes them, depending on how much talent they have. And I just don't see T.J. Yeldon as that dominant, dangerous player for the position that he was drafted in.
Yeah, I think those are good points. But I really love the Dante Fowler pick because he's a guy that can play both linebacker and defensive end. And in the NFL, especially with teams that might want to play 3-4 defense, that's important because depending on the down and, the situation that they're in, you can move the guy, he could be on line of scrimmage, off the line of scrimmage, whatever. So I really like Fowler. He's a quick guy, and he's someone that played in the, in the SEC. So he's capable of catching, quick quarterbacks, guys that can run, and he's going to have a fun time chasing down Andrew Luck and trying to bring him down. But I think if anyone can do it, it's him. So I really like that pick. And in terms of Yeldon, Alabama recently, they've churned out some pretty solid running backs. So I think that Yeldon is a nice place to start. Like you said, offensive line should have been addressed earlier. They did pick an offensive lineman in the third round, which is a solid pick. But we'll see. And, with the draft, you brought this up earlier, we won't really know how well teams did until a few years down the road. Now we can, we talked about the positives of the draft. Let's talk about which teams didn't draft very well.
Well, I gave my pick with Jacksonville, so you can go ahead with your pick and come back to me.
All right. Now, I have a pretty interesting pick, and I think some people will disagree with me about this, but I'm going to go with the Tennessee Titans. Now, Tennessee, second overall in the draft, took Marcus Mariota, Heisman Trophy winner in college, led Oregon to, the national championship game where he didn't perform that well. But a lot of people think he could have gone first in the draft over Winston. Now, this hasn't been reported much, but the Philadelphia Eagles, who were coached by Chip Kelly, who coached Mariota in college at Oregon a few seasons ago, offered the Titans an absolutely insane trade that, I think the Titans actually would have been much better off accepting this trade. Now, this is according to Ian Rappaport of the NFL Network. Chip Kelly and the Philadelphia Eagles offered the Titans two first-round picks, a third-round pick, Sam Bradford, Fletcher Cox, and cornerback Brandon Boykin, and linebacker Michael Kendricks, all for the number two pick, which obviously would have been used to take Mariota. Now, the draft is a funny thing because you don't know what you're getting. You don't know if a guy could just be a bust or if he could have a career-ending injury or, what could happen. So the draft is not a sure thing. Now, what is a sure thing is getting a guy like Sam Bradford, who, you know, did struggle in his first few seasons with the Rams, but he was, again, he was on the Rams, not a great team. And if you were to, you know, maybe go to another team, he could do well. Fletcher Cox is an incredible player, and Brandon Boykin's also very good. Michael Kendricks is solid. And still the Titans would be getting two first-round picks and a third-rounder. So I think that, well, getting Mariota, you know, looks great for the future. If they wanted to win right now and if they wanted a more, you know, sure thing, they should have accepted this trade.
I see your point, because that is a ridiculous offer and a ridiculous offer to turn down. At the same time, I think I'm going to have to disagree with you on this point. I think sitting there at number two is a rare position where they see Jameis Winston go number one, and you're not in that position very often where you own that pick, and there's a guy on the board who could potentially be the franchise quarterback. And the thing about this league is, in order to be successful, in order to have a long playoff run, to win your division and compete for a Super Bowl, you need that guy. You need that top-tier caliber quarterback in this league. And if Tennessee did their homework and Tennessee was comfortable picking Mariota and they believe that he was the franchise quarterback, I don't believe that any compensation or any amount of draft picks would be worth giving up to trade away that pick and trade away the future. You'd be looking at a situation where you'll be getting Sam Bradford in return. But we know what Sam Bradford's ceiling in this league is. He was a former number one pick. He's already been in this league 5 years, and I know that he's had his injury problems, and he hasn't been able to show what he's been able to do to the fullest extent. But if you think that Mariota has a chance to be great and you're comfortable making that pick, just because it's the quarterback position, just because it's so important, I don't think you can give that up. I just don't.
Well, I mean, again, we're going to see in a few years how Mariota turns out. But if I was a general manager in the NFL, which I'm not, and I think most people would disagree with me on this, but I just see it being more of a sure bet. And if I was a bad team and I want to get better, you know, this is a guaranteed way to improve. Because Sam Bradford is an upgrade over Zach Mettenberger, whoever they start at quarterback, whoever started for them this past season, you know, they switched it up. Sam Bradford is, in fact, an upgrade. And getting these other guys, especially guys on the defensive side of the ball, plus getting more first-round picks, plus a third-round pick, that will really upgrade a team.
And while Mariota
is nice, you know, He is only one guy, and we don't know how he's going to turn out.
And, John, I completely agree with your point. And to add to that, I think that in this particular upcoming season, I have no doubt in my mind that if Marcus Mariota starts, Sam Bradford will be the more successful quarterback, at least for this season. And that's what's going to annoy people, especially Tennessee fans. I personally think Mariota is going to come into this league and struggle in the beginning. I think it's very rare. And I don't really know if you can give me a good example where a quarterback who ran that college spread system, where he's not ever passing out of pocket and he's not proven to be a pocket passer, can come into the league, start their rookie year, and be successful. There's definitely a learning process. It's going to take years to develop. But the thing with Tennessee is they were a 2-14 or a 3-13 team last year. Even with Sam Bradford, they're not ready to be a successful team. So the way I see it is, if you're going to start Mariota right away, which I think could be a mistake, just because of the development process that he must go through, I don't think they're ready to compete now anyway. So that's another reason why I like the pick.
You know, I think throwing Mariota into the fire right away, unfortunately that will happen and he will struggle. Because like you said, it's very rare to find a quarterback coming out of college who's in a, you know, college-style system, more of a spread offense, some option plays, never lining up under center. It's difficult to adjust, and having to go in right away, and he's going to struggle, he's going to lose games. I'm interested to see, you know, mentally how he comes out of this season, because it can really go both ways. You know, if Mariota says, wow, this is not what I expected coming out of college, you know, I thought I would do well, I was the second pick in the draft, and now my team's sitting at 4-12, and I've thrown more interceptions than touchdowns, and I'm getting sacked a lot, and I'm making bad throws. I want to see if he's going to, you know, mature quick enough. That's going to be a key thing this season. If he can mature quick enough and realize, all right, I'm not in the best team right now. We're building ourselves up. And, I mean, we'll just see. It's going to be interesting. You know, the draft is complete speculation. And, I mean, I guess, you know, in summary of my argument, it's just more of a sure thing with if the Titans were to make that trade. They'd know what they'd be getting.
Right, and in order to advance as a franchise, in order to really take that next step, I think risk is a necessity. I'll leave it at that.
Okay. All right, that's a fair point. So before I move on to our next topic, if anybody wants to call in with any questions, any comments about the draft, about the NBA playoffs, which we're about to talk about the Pacquiao-Mayweather fight, just call in. The number to call is 347-884-8496. Once again, 347-884-8496. So let's move on to the NBA playoffs now. And we are both disappointed after what happened last night in Brooklyn. The Nets lost. They lost the series 4-2 to Atlanta. At one point, it was 2 games to 2 games. Seemed like the Nets might have had a chance, but it just wasn't meant to be. So, Jordan, quick final thoughts on the Nets.
Very disappointing season. I think that's the one word that would sum it up. I think they enter the season not with as high of expectations as the previous season when they acquired Paul Pierce and Garnett and AK-47 and everything. But I think this was still a team that people thought could compete in a weak Eastern Conference. And they never seemed to be able to find their identity throughout an 82-game season. We thought there were definitely stretches where they played well, and they would be able to build something, build off a win, and then they would just have a massive disappointment, and they would go on a 5-game losing streak. And it seemed like it was just that up and down type of season that kind of ended in a fitting way. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm disappointed that they were not able to knock off the Hawks after some hope after they tied the series at 2, but I don't really think this team had a chance against Atlanta. It was nice to see them make the playoffs because there was no harm in that, considering they would not own their lottery pick anyway. That would go to Atlanta via the Joe Johnson trade. But throughout the first 5 games of this series, it was very entertaining, and it was great basketball to watch. They all went down to the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter or overtime. The 2 games in Brooklyn were incredible, I think. It was a fun series to watch until the blowout the other day, but going into this offseason, there's no doubt in my mind that there's going to be some tremendous changes to this team, whether that means trading Deron Williams, who was just completely awful in the playoffs besides that one spectacular Game 4. He was a no-show for the other 5 games. We see Brooke Lopez, who was undoubtedly the Nets MVP in the second half of the season, and had a great stretch there in March and April. He'll be opting out of his contract, and he'll hit the market. Joe Johnson, the guy who's had his name in a trade speculation. So this team is going to head in a different direction, and we'll see what Billy King does. I know Mikhail Prokhorov loves to compete and wants to play winning basketball, but it might be time after a very short 3 years that the Nets have to enter the rebuilding process, and that might be the reality. They just have these aging stars who obviously can't play well together, and we'll see what happens.
Yeah, it's definitely a disappointing season. And I think just to quickly focus on the team that they played in the series, the Atlanta Hawks, you know, the Hawks were arguably some people say the best team in the NBA. I think they were the second best team in the NBA, you know, in the regular season. Great record, the top seed in the Eastern Conference, although they struggled a little bit against the Nets. They won the series 4-2, and now they face the 5 seed, the Washington Wizards, who swept the Toronto Raptors. And it was just a great performance by Washington, and they have some momentum now going in. And Atlanta, you know, Kyle Korver finally, you know, picked it up more last night, and I think they have a little bit of momentum, but Washington is, you know, they're on the top of the mountain right now. They're playing the best basketball that they have been all season long. So, do you think the Wizards have a legitimate chance to beat the Hawks next round?
Do they have a chance? Yes, because they played great basketball against Toronto. But the thing with the Wizards is that their inconsistency could kill them. They'll have John Wall look incredible one game, and he'll be a no-show performance in the next game. So they had an up-and-down type of season. So it's difficult to pick the Hawks. I think it's difficult to pick the Wizards. I think the Hawks the big thing for the Hawks is that they were able to get that monkey off their back. There was talk going in that they never had these expectations. These guys have had playoff experience, so they never had experience playing as the team to be, as the hunted team that everybody wants to take down. And now that they get past round one, I really think they could make a return to the team that they were in the regular season, where they were just dominant and blowing out teams. And there could be a huge change between round one and two for this Hawks team. So I'll pick the Hawks.
Very interesting. It should be a fun series to watch. Two very good teams going at it. I think it's safe to say after the first round of the playoffs that Cleveland and Golden State look like the two best teams, and I personally think that they will meet up in the championship. Cleveland was the 2 seed in the East. They swept the Boston Celtics, and Golden State was the 1 seed in the West. They swept the Pelicans. Cleveland will face off against Chicago next round. Golden State will face off against Memphis. Do you think that the same championship matchup will happen?
I personally do not. I think this Cleveland-Chicago series is going to be very, very interesting. I think they're two evenly matched teams. However, Cleveland is going to be missing one of the members of their big three, Kevin Love, and that is a huge loss despite the fact that the critics have been all over Kevin Love this season. He's not played up to his potential and his stats that he put up in Minnesota, which is expected. He's kind of that Chris Bosh type player whose numbers went down once he started playing with these other superstars. But if you look at the stats, when Kevin Love is on the floor compared to off the floor, and this Cleveland offense and defense is proven to be much more efficient when he is on the floor, the way he's able to space the floor, the way he's able to shoot threes, the way he's able to rebound the ball. It's a huge loss for Cleveland. Now, fortunately, they got guys who can step in, like a younger Tristan Thompson, who's shown flashes, like a Kendrick Perkins, who's won an NBA Finals before, and he's a great defender down low. Fortunately, they have pieces that can kind of fit in and try to replace Kevin Love, but at the end of the day, that's a big loss. Do I think they can still get by Chicago? I do. I think that series will probably go the distance to 7, and then anything could happen. But I feel more safe picking Atlanta to come out of the East than I do Cleveland.
I mean, I personally think that Cleveland is the best team. They have the best player in the NBA. So I think that eventually they'll pull through. But right now we're going to move on to the big fight tonight. Before that, if anybody wants to call in, the number to call, 347-884-8496. All right, so everyone's calling this the fight of the century, and it really is. Boxing has the popularity, you know, surrounding boxing has really gone downhill since, I'd say, the 90s. This is a fight that probably should have happened 5 years ago when both these guys were, you know, younger. They're getting up there in age. Pacquiao and Mayweather, you know, they're getting older. So this is probably going to be both of their, you know, near the end of their boxing careers. So, you know, I'm not going to pretend that I'm a boxing expert, but Jordan, I know that you watch boxing and you know a lot about these two boxers. So just give us a little bit of background and some insight on this fight.
Well, John, you're definitely right. This fight has been 5-6 years in the making. And would it have been a better fight if they squared off in 2010? Yeah. I mean, this is a 38-year-old Mayweather against a 36-year-old Pacquiao. Both towards the end of their career, I think if Mayweather ends up winning this, they'll probably have about two fights left before he goes out. Mayweather obviously holds the advantage. I think he's proven that he is the more aggressive and the better fighter here. He's 47-0. Let's be honest. I think Mayweather has the advantage, and Pacquiao has struggled a bit in the past few years. But there's no doubt these are the two best boxers in the world right now, even with their age. And to call it the fight of the century, which people are doing, is a little ridiculous. That's mainly because this is the biggest fight in the past 30 years, I'd say 25, 30 years, just because of the rarity of superstars in this sport. You really only see a couple guys at the top that everybody in the world who don't even follow boxing know about. But, you know, I think it's a little disrespectful how people are calling it that when you've had, you know, great fights such as Muhammad Ali, Joe Lewis, Sugar Ray Leonard, Sugar Ray Robinson, and all these great fighters. I mean, boxing was one of the biggest sports in the country in the 50s and the 60s. So this is a great fight, but neither of these two boxers will go down as, I think, top five, top 10 boxers of all time. But there's no doubt there's a huge fight. And I think for Mayweather, from his perspective, people are going to say that this fight defines his career. And he'll disagree with that, considering it'd be one blemish on a magnificent career. But I really think it does. I think if Mayweather, to be considered one of the greatest, one of the elite in the sport, you got to be in your era, in the time period that you were at the top. And if Mayweather can defeat Pacquiao, I think he'll cement his legacy in this fight. If not, I'm not going to say that his legacy is ruined, but it'd certainly be a big blow to his status as a boxer ending his career. So for my pick for the fight, I'm going to go with Mayweather, even though I'll definitely be rooting for Pacquiao. I think Mayweather is the more dominant fighter. I'm definitely going to go with Mayweather. You know, I'll be rooting for Pacquiao. It would be nice to see him get the win after what Mayweather's done and what Mayweather says. And he'll make it seem like it's all about the money. You know, he's going to make, what, $140 million off this. His camp will make $140 million off of this fight. But when he steps into that ring, you know, he still trains and he still competes like he's poor and like he's playing for the money. So it'll be very interesting to see what happens tonight.
Well, like I said earlier, I'm not a boxing expert. But what I do know is that in sports and in life in general, it's very difficult to be perfect. And right now, Mayweather is perfect, you know, 47-0. And some will say he hasn't been tested yet because he's avoided this fight. I think that he has. He has fighted some quality boxers. But I don't think he'll remain perfect because that's almost impossible to do. You can look at the Patriots a few years ago in the Super Bowl. You can look at some other times that teams try to remain perfect, and it rarely happens. So I want Pacquiao to win, and I believe that Manny Pacquiao will win this fight tonight. It's going to be a great one. I hope everyone watches it. Unfortunately, you have to pay a lot of money, and I don't want to give my money to a guy like Floyd Mayweather who has, you know, hit women and some of the stuff that he says. I'm not a big fan of him. But you know what? This is going to be a great fight. I'm excited.
Well, one thing before we conclude, one thing that I want to add is I'm really interested in seeing how this fight starts, particularly the first three or four rounds. I think Pacquiao is going to come out and play defense a little bit. I don't think he's going to be as aggressive or as intense as Mayweather will be at the start. I think he's going to try to get a feel for Mayweather. Obviously, he's never played someone, he's never fought someone to this caliber, to Mayweather's caliber before, and I think it'll take some time for Pacquiao to really even this out, but in the later rounds, he could, with his stamina, compete with Mayweather, so it should be interesting to see what happens.
Yep, it's going to be a great fight. I hope everyone enjoys the fight. I hope everyone has a great day today. Keep watch all the sporting events going on. Thanks for listening. Thanks for being on today, Jordan. We'll be back soon. Season 3 is going to be starting soon. We promise we're going to be having updates on our Facebook page, Twitter page. So until then, see you soon.